Good evening. Glad to see all those that came out to join us in the unexpected rain. Desire y'all's prayers this evening. Have a little thought. And it's been a challenge to me, so hopefully it'll be a challenge to you all as well. What I wrote on the board is strive lawfully, but with love. So I'd like to start off in 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 2, starting in the fourth verse. It says, "No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. And if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. The husband that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits. Consider what I say, and the Lord give thee understanding in all things." Now, this section of verses, you know, basically says, you know, if a man's going to go to war, he doesn't entangle himself into various affairs. He focuses on his task at hand. If he's going to strive for the masteries or strive to be good at things, he focuses in and does it by the rules, the laws of it. I read of a lady one time. She got into running marathons. And on the East Coast, she started doing pretty decent. She'd come in and, you know, the top 10, 20, 30 people out of these big marathons. She eventually qualified for the Boston Marathon. And when she ran that one, not only did she win it, but she set a world record. Now, that kind of got some people's eyebrows up, because they're like, okay, this woman has never been in the leader group, like the very front. She's always been towards the front, but not that much of a standout. And then to just set a world record on top of it, it raised some eyebrows. So they started digging into what might be going on. Took them a while, but eventually the story came out. She would go to the race, and she would take off, and she would run the first 5-10 minutes of the race. And if y'all know much about marathon running, it usually is a 2-3 hour race, sometimes a little longer. So she'd run 5 or 10 minutes, and then she would get to a point on the course where she could get off without being seen, and she would go hop on a air-conditioned city bus or something wherever she was at, and she would take it to a chosen spot close to the end, and then she would kind of hide and watch the people go by, and about the right time for her to get the score she was wanting, she would jump out. And then she would run across the finish line and get her little prize. Except at the Boston Marathon, when she got there, she was watching for the people she was looking for. She said, oh, they must have already gone by. And so she jumped out, not realizing she jumped out way ahead of everybody. And so as they looked at what she was doing, they're like, okay, so she did that in the Boston Marathon. And since we've never really heard of this lady before, they went back and started looking at all the races that she had to run and win at to qualify to run at the Boston Marathon. And they were able to track back and find in every race that she had ran where she'd taken a shortcut, where she had not followed the rules of the race. What do you think happened to the trophies and everything she had? They wanted them back. They're not yours. You didn't win those lawfully. How long did she keep the world record? According to the world record, people never, because once they realized she hadn't ran the race at all, totally disqualified. Everything she'd been striving for, she lost because she hadn't been doing it lawfully. The one Verse 6 is an interesting verse. It says, the husband that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits. That almost sounds like the husband has to eat first. But doing some study on that, that's actually referring to the fact that if a farmer wants to eat the food that comes out of his field, he has to first labor. He has to put something into the field. Now, if he wants to grow potatoes, he gets his seed potatoes. He looks at him, he cuts them up into the little chunks to where he's got the eyes the way he wants them. He builds his hills up, he plants them in there and waters them and takes care of them, and he gets his field planted with potatoes. And then he goes to his field for sweet corn. And he goes and he gets his sweet corn on the cob and he starts cutting up into little chunks, right? Builds his little hills and puts little chunks of corn on the cob down in those hills too, right? That's how you plant sweet corn, isn't it? What do you think would happen if he planted sweet corn that way? I don't know. I've never heard of anybody doing that, because that's not how... Every farmer will tell you, if you want to grow sweet corn, there's a certain way. There's a law of nature, if you will. There's a certain way you've got to do it. That's why you do the potatoes that way that they do, because there's a certain way potatoes grow. And if you want to propagate them, this is how you do it. There's rules and laws to everything. Nature. We have rules and laws of man and in society. And God has his rules and laws. So let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Chapter 9, starting in verse 24. Says, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not so uncertainly, so fight I not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. Lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. So here we see some advice. And it's basically saying you need to keep the goal of what you're striving for before you. Keep focused on it. And now the word temperate here actually doesn't mean temperance as in middle of the road. What the word temperate here means, actually, highly controlled. You read of athletes in our world today that want to go to the Olympics, that want to participate in some of these professional sports, and you read about the regimens that they go through to be able to compete. Do they eat healthy on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and anything else the rest of the week? Junk food? No, their diets are very particular. Their sleep cycles are very particular. Their exercise regimens are very particular. Everything focused on this goal. Now, kind of going back to the marathon. A marathon is 26.2 miles is a marathon. My understanding of the history of the marathon is the reason it became a race to be able to run and win was the first marathon was when a messenger went to carry news about a battle to a king, and he had to run 26.2 miles straight. And the history, as I understand it, is when he delivered his news, he fell over dead. So it was a feat that, you know, he made it, he got the news there quickly, but he died doing it. But you know how men are. Well, I wonder if I can run that without dying. I wonder. So it became a feat to try to do. We have people climb Mount Everest. Why? Because someone else did. As I've heard somebody said, because it was there. Have you heard of the stories about the bodies on Mount Everest? The people that have died climbing it, that are actually known by nicknames, like there's Green Boots. They actually become markers so people know where they're at on the mountain. When you get to Green Boots, you've got so many left to go. When you get here, you'll, if you look off that way, you'll see a person sitting frozen in the niche of a rock. And this is where you're at. So if I decided I was going to run a marathon and I said, well, to train for it, what I'm going to do is I'm going to run 26.2 miles every day. Would that be wise? I mean, if I could get to where I could run 26.2 miles every day, that would be an impressive feat, but there's something about that that would wear the body down. The body wouldn't have time to recover. And that's where the striving lawfully but with love parks comes into. You can set a goal, you can set to strive for something and say, I'm going to do it, I'm going to go hard line, I'm going to hold it so tight that there's no way, if I can do this every day, I'll be fine. But we can set it so tight that we're actually doing harm to ourselves. We're not able to do what we want. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. This is probably a familiar set of past scriptures to a lot of folks. I'm going to start off there in verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but where there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. And then dropping down to verse 13. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. So we see in the top part some things that you would say are people striving lawfully. Things that are good things to do if you're walking as a Christian. Speaking clearly with the tongue, speaking things that angels would speak. But if you don't do it with love, what does it say you're like? A sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. Y'all have seen those cymbals, right? Crash, crash, crash. If I said I was going to get up here, and we don't do music in the service, so I'm not. But if I said I was going to get up here and play a solo on the cymbals for you all, how many people would be looking forward to that? You know, crash, crash. Just, you know, there might be a few people that might be curious to say, what is a cymbal solo? What, I mean, you can't make different notes with it. You can hit different beats with it. Maybe make it louder, softer, clamp it, make it rattle differently. But at the end of the day, you probably couldn't recognize any song if I said, I just played Jingle Bells. You probably couldn't recognize what song it was. Do we want our speech to be like that? It also talks about the gift of prophecy, understanding mysteries, all knowledge, all faith can remove mountains. But then you don't have love. And it says, I am nothing. Nothing. It doesn't matter if you moved mountains, if it was the mountain literally changed spots. If you don't have that love, you're nothing. Talked about giving the body to be burned. That sounds pretty intense. But if you did that, still no profit. If you didn't have love, if you didn't have charity. So let's look at the bottom down there, that last verse. Now abideth faith, hope, and charity. These three, but the greatest of these is charity. Now faith, how many of us remember the verse, without faith it is what? It is impossible to please him. But the greatest of these is charity. Almost seems odd, doesn't it? It's impossible. I mean, that, the Bible doesn't lie. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. But charity is even greater than that. Hope. There's a verse we talk about. What is hope related to? Faith. And in what way? Faith is substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. But even still, charity is higher than that. Why did God send Christ to the earth? John 3:16 is a familiar verse. What does it start out? Because God made a bunch of rules? Nope. Starts out, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. God wrote the rule book, but he sent his Son out of love, not because anything in the rule book said, I have to. The law is necessary. We will be judged according to this book we have. We'll be judged according to the word. But Christ himself said to folks one time, he said, I'm not here to judge you, to condemn you. But what he told them was, when you get to judgment, when you get stand before God Almighty, the words I said, they will judge you. What you did with them, if you follow them correctly or not, they will be applied to you. But he wasn't here to apply them. He was here to save people. He was here with a different purpose. Matthew 22, starting in verse 36. Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So everything, it says, hangs on this love for God, love for our fellow men. Now, if I walked over here to the wall and I had a picture that said the law and the prophets, and I take that picture and then I take a nail and I call that nail love and I put that nail in the wall and I hang that picture on the wall, what happens? Picture's hung on the wall. Hopefully it's square and straight. People can look at it. People can enjoy it, right? If I take that nail out of the wall and attempt to put that picture back up, what happens? It'll fall. Do you realize this word hangs to me is very intriguing? Because when you hang something, if the support is removed, the only thing that item is going to do that you're trying to hang is it will fall. And if it's brittle, it'll shatter to pieces. What Christ said here was, on this love hangs all the law and all the prophets. You can live by the letter all you want to. If it's not hung up on that nail of love, the nails of love that held him to the cross, your rules and laws will fall. They'll shatter. They may shatter you. They may shatter other people. Because love is what started everything. That's the motivation that God has for everything he does. Thinking about driving. The speed limit is generally 70 miles an hour. Most highways, there are some that are higher, some that are lower, but 70 miles an hour is generally the speed limit. I can get out there and be in a hurry to go somewhere and be driving down the road and get up behind somebody that wants to run 60 miles an hour. And I can get behind them and start blowing my horn, waving that they need to get over because the law says that I can drive 70. And I got somewhere to go. And you need to get out of my way because apparently you ain't got anywhere to go. You're driving slow. Get off the road. It's my turn to go. Am I applying that law with love? No. We hear a lot of things in the newspaper about road rage, don't we? Read the stories, as long as it doesn't disturb your peace too much. And what you will find is almost in every instance, not just one party, but both sides of those circumstances grabbed hold of a law that where they felt like they were in the right and they weren't backing up for nobody. And things escalated, and then there's accidents, there's deaths, people gone out into eternity. All because love was not brought into the equation. Diane and I, driving back from Holly Hill, ran into a few times where we were down, I think, 10, 15 miles an hour for a stretch. You get up there, there had been an accident. They had the interstate down to one lane. Have you ever seen 20 cars try to fit into the opening for one? Human nature. Everybody wants to get ahead. But we saw, and we saw that happen in one place, and everything comes to a standstill while somebody finally gives way, and then you can start moving again. But we came to another spot, and it was interesting. A person in the lane that everybody was trying to get in made an opening, and a person by him slowed down. And in the other lane, people started matching up to the openings. And then when the road closed, everybody came together. A little bit of a slowdown, but not the stop. Why? Even though the law might have said that that person needs to merge into my lane, can you help a brother merge? A fellow human merge? Just show a little love. John chapter 14, verse 15. If you love me, keep my commandments. You know, Jesus wants us to follow his law. He wants us to strive lawfully to get in heaven. There is nothing wrong with doing what's in the Bible, with holding a tight line. What did he say about the Pharisees? What they say, do. Now, how many times do we sometimes hear, and I've possibly been guilty of it myself, but hear from the pulpit where the Pharisees, we talk about like they held things too tight, too strict. But Jesus said, what they say, do. But there was another thing he said after that. Not as they do it. How did they do it? Harshness? Critically? From my understandings, reading what I could on it in research, to be a Pharisee, you had to live your life in such a way that after a year, they could not find where you had breached any one of their laws. That's just to become a Pharisee. You had to live that way for a year. If you messed up, slipped up, had an error, start over. They set a high bar to get into their little, I'm going to call it little club. Oh, they were very particular on the rules. Held them very well. but not in a way that invited people to come join them. Not in a way that invited people to feel like, I can try this, I can do this, because it was said as something that is difficult to attain. This is hard to do, and you need to be very focused to do it. We're not going to let just anybody in to our little group. Do we want to be that way when it comes to striving lawfully? Where we sometimes hold on to something that we do well, and then we try to... Brother Marty made a comment, I think it was in one of his messages or when we were talking, I'm not sure, can't sure remember which one, about people in the world will oftentimes grab onto something to give them a moral base because they're not living right. They'll grab onto something, and I think the example he used was like the environment. Because even though they may not live a very good life and they might be a cranky person and difficult to deal with, they can claim that I'm helping save the planet. I'm looking out for the greater good of mankind. And it gives them a moral base that soothes the lack of true morality in their heart. And these people, how do they hold their ground? Do they do it kindly? Most people that pick up a cause in the world, after a while, they'll almost be screaming and shouting at people that don't think like them. Pick a cause, any cause. Because they're not doing it for the right reason. 1 John chapter 5. 1 John chapter 5, starting in verse 2. By this we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and keep His commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not grievous. Now, I hadn't really taken that this close note of that first verse there, verse number 2. By this we know that we love the children of God. By the love we have for the Lord in keeping His commandments. Have you ever tied the fact that the way you show love to the Christian community is by how you follow the commandments of the Lord? I hadn't thought of it myself, like I said, until I was studying on this. So even here we see that the love of God, keeping His commandments, is tied back to what? Love for our fellow man. So striving lawfully still is tied back to love. There's a reason. Thinking about the traffic laws. If I give way to my fellow man, the person traveling, doesn't it make everybody easier? Get along easier? You flow better? Why? Show a little love. Show a little kindness. You don't have to read the law so literally. It says I can go 70. Yes, it does, but that's the maximum. The speed limit laws do not say that you have to drive 70. That's actually, if you read the law, that's supposed to be the maximum you should ever drive. And yet a lot of people, to them, that's the speed they will almost claim they have to drive. And if you're not allowing them to drive that full 70 miles an hour, you're in the wrong. What if that poor person that you're so upset at that's ahead of you is late for work in a car that if he drives it any faster is unsafe and he's liable to have a wreck, but he's poor and he doesn't have the money to fix it yet? And he's doing his best to get out of your way. But he knows if he slows down, he's liable to lose his job. So he as much as you would like for him to get off the road, he's going to stay on it. Because he's got a family to feed. Wouldn't a little love go well in that situation? Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 8 and 9. Going back to the source of things. But because the Lord loved you, and because He would keep the oath which He had sworn unto your fathers, Hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt? Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. God's love is his covenant. He has offered that to us, not because we asked for it. Go read the old law, the new law, the covenants that are out there. Was that because some man somewhere said, well, Lord, would you make a covenant with me? I've got a great idea, Lord. But instead, the Lord's like, you know what? I love you all. I want to treat y'all special. I want to be your God. I want to do wonderful things for you. But is love a one-way street? It's not, is it? Love is a two-way street. If one side of the equation is always giving, so to speak, and the love is never reciprocated, what happens after a while? Things change. The person wanting to show love starts saying, well, maybe I need to, and I'm talking humans here, not God, starts talking about maybe I need to look somewhere else. This isn't working out. Now, God wants us to reciprocate love. How does he want us to do it? If you love me, keep my commandments. Keeping the commandments isn't optional. We read in some of the earlier verses about striving so you'll win a race. We're all in a race to heaven. And we're not necessarily racing against each other, but for the sake of the example I want to bring out, when you get to heaven and God comes to judge your race, do you want the third or fourth prize trophy for the way you ran? He's looking at your life and says, well, in the scheme of things, you don't get to first place. You don't get to second. Here's your fourth place trophy. Do you want to get that from the Lord at the end of your run? He doesn't want to give you fourth place. He wants everyone to get first. He wants everybody to be welcomed in. Well done, a good and faithful servant. But it requires love. We have here from 1 Samuel, verse 15 and 22, chapter 15, verse 22. And Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. How do you think it would go if, as a parent, I talk to children, my children, if Di and I had some, and I said, here's what we're going to do. Every day you keep your room clean, you get $1. Every day you don't keep your room clean, you have to give me $1. And then the child comes up to me and says, hey, here's $7. Because I got a lot of plans with my friends this week, and I'm not keeping my room clean. How would that go over, you think? Under the old law, there were people that kind of got that attitude. I am following the law. Yes, I messed up, and I went and I gave my sacrifice, and I did my thing. I'm good now. Get off my back. Do you think that the example I just gave of saying you give me money back if you don't do what you're supposed to was intended to offset the lack of obedience? That was the goal, was to just teach them that if you don't clean, you give me $1 and everything's still good? No. Most of the time, the parents don't care. The idea is trying to get them to just keep the room clean. Because the child that does that doesn't care about the parent. There's no care or concern about what the parent's trying to do. At the end of the day, it's about the child. What do I care? What do I want to do? Well, this week I want to play with my friends, okay? Well, mom and dad said, I'll lose a dollar. And I know I'm fine with losing a dollar. Here you go, mom and dad. Here's my $7 for the week. I'm going to have fun this week. No love for the parents. Obedience is better than sacrifice. And what is obedience, according to the word, based off of? Our love. When we go to follow the word, obedience is the best bet. But obedience motivated by true and genuine love for the Lord and for those around us. Y'all pray for me.